Welcome to Rethinking Trade with Lori Wallach, a podcast that unpacks international trade and how it affects you without putting you to sleep.
Welcome back to Rethinking Trade with Lori Wallach. I'm Lori Wallach. Today we have a special podcast episode featuring two names and two voices you likely will recognize. We recently teamed up with the Columbia Center on Sustainable Investment and the Georgetown Law Center, Center for the Advancement of the Rule of Law in the Americas, or CORLA, to write and then release a paper on investor-state dispute settlement, ISDS. What the heck is ISDS? ISDS grants foreign investors and corporations new substantive rights and privileges, often including rights that aren't available in domestic law, and empowers them to sue governments outside of governments' domestic court systems, but in front of tribunals of three private sector attorneys who serve on these ad hoc tribunals. And these lawyers can award the corporations unlimited sums to be paid in compensation. All that the foreign corporations have to do is convince the lawyers that an environmental law or a safety regulation violates their special investor rights granted in what are now hundreds of ISDS enforced agreements. These ad hoc tribunals are not subject to outside appeal. A lot of the tribunalists rotate between suing governments for corporations and deciding cases. So very strong structural conflict of interest. And there is no limit on the amount of compensation to be paid by a country's taxpayers that they can order be paid over to corporations when policies change, when democracy happens. As you're going to hear, the results of this system of ISDS have been extremely damaging. And not surprisingly, a variety of countries are starting to exit this ISDS regime, which was one of the tools of the height of hyperglobalization, of neoliberalism.
So the paper we released outlines the ways to get out of this mess. It spells out mechanisms in international law that the countries in the Americas can extract themselves from the ISDS regime, and also the U.S. domestic legal options to do so. After you hear our interview today, maybe take a look at the paper on our website. That's rethinktrade.org, and the paper is called Turning the Tide, How to Harness the America's Partnership for Economic Prosperity to Deliver an ISDS Free Americas. So the America's Partnership for Economic Prosperity is also called APEP. And I just mentioned that because sometimes in the interview, you're going to hear someone say APEP. That's a negotiation with Latin American and Caribbean countries that President Biden launched about a year and a half ago. And it's a possible venue to deal with this ISDS problem. When we released the paper, we hosted a webinar with all of the paper's authors and one very special guest, Nobel-winning economist Professor Joseph Stiglitz.
Among Joe Stiglitz's many roles is university professor at Columbia. He won the Nobel Prize in economics and the John Bates Clark Medal. He is a former vice president and chief economist of the World Bank. He has had numerous other roles and contributions through his scholarship and advocacy.
Professor Santos is a professor of law and the faculty director at CORLA at Georgetown Law Center. He teaches and writes in the areas of international trade, economic development, and transnational labor law and drug policy. Take it away, Professor Santos.
Thank you so much, Lori, and good morning to everyone. Professor Stiglitz, it's really an honor and a pleasure to have you join us today in the launch of this white paper. Let me jump right into it. Starting in the early 90s, many countries in the Americas, and in fact in the world, went on an investment agreement signing spree. Just among the 12 countries that have agreed to participate in this Biden administration's initiative, the APEP, there are 43 investment agreements in force. And today, after many ISDS attacks on countries' environmental, health, or other public interest policies, It seems hard to believe that countries granted multinational corporations these special rights and the power to sue sovereign governments before arbitral tribunals to obtain these staggering sums of money in awards. You've written a lot about ISDS and share your perspective. So I wanted us to start with your view about why countries sign on to all of these agreements. What were the promised benefits of ISDS that led countries to be so active in signing these agreements?
First, let me say what a pleasure it is to be here to discuss an issue that I've been engaged in for a very long time. I think to understand why they signed these agreements, I would begin by saying that they were under very aggressive pressure from the advanced countries. And those advanced countries were essentially doing the bidding of their big firms. And European countries had these agreements with their former colonies in Asia and Africa. They saw that as a way to protect their colonial era business interests. But the United States had these agreements with the many, many countries that we began to invest in. What we said to the developing countries, what we promised, was that it would bring more foreign investment. It was, in that sense, a key development tool. And bringing more investment would increase their incomes and help move them out of the poverty. The essential issue that was of concern at that moment of time, many years ago, was, or at least that was mentioned, was the problem of expropriation, where the governments take over the assets. But there have been very few expropriations, and the U.S. government and the World Bank provide insurance gigs against expropriation. The agenda was actually much broader and much, I think, more invidious. And particularly, one of the interesting aspects is that the U.S. never considered the threats that these agreements could pose to its own domestic policies. It only saw them as a way to lock in favorable treatment for U.S. multinationals abroad. We know today, though, that these ISDS expand far beyond the scope of compensation for actual expropriation, and both in terms of the amount of money and the circumstances. It extended to what was called regulatory takings. Regulatory takings is whenever you pass a regulation that affects the value of an asset, it is referred to as a regulatory taking. The notion that firms should be compensated for that has been rejected by every branch of the U.S. government. I was in the Clinton administration, where we fought strongly against those that wanted that kind of compensation. Congress supported us, and the courts have supported us. But that was where the concept really started. The interesting thing is that the ISDS provision in NAFTA, Chapter 11, was never discussed. I was in the Clinton administration when NAFTA was ratified. We never had a meeting about the implications of Chapter 11 for the United States. In fact, if we had really had a discussion, it would never have been accepted, because we were fighting a battle against regulatory takings. It was simply not realized that it gave all the rights to foreign investors and all the liability and responsibility to domestic governments.
So let me pick up on something that you said, which is what countries believed that ISDS could do, whether it was pressured or imposed by rich countries or self-willingly adopted by developing countries, this powerful idea that it was a development tool, that ISDS could bring foreign direct investment. So after 30 years of this regime, have those expectations been achieved? What's your assessment?
The short answer is no. The promise of ISDS was that FDI, foreign direct investment, flood in, didn't materialize. There are econometric studies showing there's no strong evidence on that. There are case studies that reinforce the econometrics. Countries that had numerous ISDS agreements did not get more FDI than those who didn't. Same thing if you look across sectors. Countries like Brazil, Heck, study FDI, didn't sign these kinds of agreements for good reason. Countries that pulled out of ISDS agreements didn't suffer. And the ISDS may be particularly irrelevant in an age of nearshoring and supply chain regionalization, irrelevant for the purpose of attracting investment, but very relevant for what it does for what countries can do, for instance, for responding to climate change. While it didn't bring in more investment, the range of consequences of these, which were, as I said before, not realized in 1994 when NAFTA began, has just expanded enormously. Not a surprise. Laurie talked about the inadequacies of the dispute resolution process in the hands of lawyers who are paid by the corporations. They've taken advantage of that to force countries to pay enormous amounts, far greater than the investment that they put in. They have to be compensated for the loss of investor return expectations, which is a totally made-up concept. And so what we're seeing is that ISDS suits are, for the most part, not about expropriation. They're about a range of things that go to environmental regulation, public health measures, financial stability rules, green energy and climate policies, taxes, anything that can go into cut into corporate profits. They can challenge labor laws like minimum wages. Anything that affects profits can be a subject of suit, which means almost everything. And let me just emphasize something, the asymmetry. If government does something that enhances profits from what was expected when the firm entered, there's no way of government recovering. And the amounts are very, very large. For instance, Italy had to pay $200 million to a British corporation for its decision to ban offshore oil drilling as part of its climate agenda. A Canadian company is seeking $15 billion of U.S. taxpayer money after President Obama declined to issue a permit for the construction of the Transcontinental Tar Sands pipeline, which is called the XL pipeline. So ultimately, ISDS has become a powerful, secretive, and very expansive regime that has been weaponized to put corporate profits over public interest policies here and around the world.
So let me ask you this. For the reasons that you just stated, many developing countries have begun to leave the regime, exited with different degrees of success. But what we're seeing now is that rich countries have also started to move in a different direction. The USMCA is a good example of that, where Canada and the US eliminated their ISDS agreement and the US and Mexico drastically reduced it. Do you think that this offers an opportunity, and particularly in the context of APEP, the America's Partnership for Economic Prosperity, is this something that could help developing countries who are interested in doing this to do that? What would you suggest?
Oh, I think this is a really important point. As I mentioned in the beginning, when NAFTA was passed, for instance, which was a very big provision of ISDS in Chapter 11 of that agreement, there was no one that thought the U.S. would be sued. The U.S., when under Trump, exited NAFTA and created a new agreement with Mexico and Canada, it didn't include Chapter 11 because it was beginning to be understood how invidious it was. Germany's had to pay large amounts over its energy policy. Now, ISDS is being viewed as one of the biggest threats to strong climate action. In fact, the numbers are amazing. A recent study concluded that if countries are to fulfill their commitments under the Paris Agreement, which doesn't go far enough, they may be liable to oil and gas corporations for $340 billion in future ISDS cases. So let me come to the main issue that we have today, and you mentioned it in terms of the discussion of the American Partnership for Economic Prosperity. The problems we've been discussing have been apparent for years. I've been writing about them. Lori's been writing about them for years. What makes these issues especially relevant now is that President Biden has launched this Americans Partnership for Economic Prosperity. And one of the main themes is fighting climate disaster and economic inequality, improving public health, strengthening democracy. To achieve any of these goals, ISDS has to go. It is a direct hindrance. The U.S. can be a key leader in this reform agenda, especially since the United States plays such an outsized role in getting its neighbors into the ISDS mess with the U.S. free trade agreements and the bilateral investment agreements. It would be a great time to strengthen regional relationships to have the United States lead an America's wide ISDS exit. Now, let me just make one final point. Launching this as a group exit would be very helpful in protecting our neighbors from one of the factors that leads some countries not to exit. That is the fear, not grounded actually with much evidence, but still it's a fear, that investors will see an individual country leaving the system as a signal of some sort that they're not committed to the private sector and to good investment. When a block of countries exit together, there is safety in numbers.
Okay, that was really interesting, but it got even more juicy. Check out some of Professor Stiglitz's answers to questions that were asked during the webinar. And make sure you listen all the way through, because you also hear a closing from this second special guest. Leading the questioning is our own Danielle Ronhell. He's Rethink Trade's research director. Danielle is a lawyer who got his law degree in Columbia and practiced trade law there. He then got an LLM at Georgetown and a master's in economic at Sciences Po in France. Danielle.
Thank you, Lori. And thank you all for the great number of questions that we have been receiving. I'm just going to pick two. The first one is the following. What is more problematic, substantive legal standards found in investment agreements or the ISDS dispute resolution mechanism? Furthermore, do the UNCITRAL reform discussions provide a useful path for reform? Is there potential for tribunals like ICSID to reform, or is it the very premise of ISDS so fundamentally flawed that countries should exit the regime entirely?
I will give the appetizer, which is yes and yes, probably not and no. So yes, the substantive rules are a problem and they need to be changed. You see that in the USMCA with respect to the US-Mexico redo, which whacks a lot of the most open-ended regulatory takings-oriented claims. And yes, the procedure is fundamentally a major problem. And that gets to the second two questions, which is reforming around the margins of a system where only the investors and corporations have rights and only the governments have obligations is a nearly impossible circumstance. So to date, those international processes have not been enormously fruitful, is how I would put it, because of these structural issues. And other folks, please dive in.
Let me add one thing. The agreements give more protections, more rights to foreign investors than they give to domestic investors. And that asymmetry is a fundamental flaw. If we think there should be some rights, they should be for all investors, whether they're foreign or domestic. And that is basically a fundamental flaw. It is terrible. The way they're implemented is not acceptable in the 20th or 21st century. And the fact that there is no limit, the way the damages are calculated is, I view as unacceptable. Those could be reformed, but the fundamental asymmetry can't be. We need a legal framework that applies to everybody.
Another listener asked the question, do you think an exit in the Americas will lead to a ripple effect of wider exits around the world in Africa, Asia, etc.?
Yes, I think the answer is yes. I mean, a number of years ago, some of the developing countries already started exit. I was had a lot of discussions with South Africa, which was one of the, you know, they weren't able to get rid of that 20-year provision, but, you know, the clock stopped ticking. Once they exited, that meant that they could not be sued for new investments. And so even if you can't get rid of that 20-year succession, it's important for countries to leave as soon as they can.
So for closing remarks, Senator Warren, who is the senior senator from the state of Massachusetts, a 2020 presidential candidate, a member of the Finance Committee, which covers trade issues, and during the TPP debate, she was really essential in unpacking what ISDS is and educating and making aware and alert much of the U.S. public to the threats ISDS poses. Senator Warren.
Good afternoon, everyone. I am so glad to have a chance to join you all today. So congratulations and thank you to the teams at Rethink Trade, the Georgetown University Law Center, and the Columbia Law School, who worked so hard to develop this report and to bring us all together for this discussion. You know, this report could not come at a more important time. Governments around the world are recognizing that the threat that ISDS poses to national sovereignty is real. The threat it poses to the environment is real. The threat it poses to workers is real. And the threat it poses to human rights is real. After decades of corporate lobbying to include ISDS in the United States trade agreements, I am so glad that the Biden administration is rejecting those calls and instead standing up for workers and for small businesses and for the environment. President Biden recognizes ISDS for what it is, a secretive extrajudicial arbitration system that gives corporations special privileges far beyond those of ordinary citizens or even of sovereign governments. The Biden administration has said ISDS will not be part of any of the United States' future trade or investment deals. Great. But future agreements are only part of the battle. The U.S. is still locked into many pre-existing agreements that allow corporations to weaponize ISDS as a bargaining chip when we do something that they don't like. This means anytime we or our trading partners try to rein in abuses by giant corporations, all those companies have to do is file an ISDS claim for billions of dollars, then turn around and say, well, they'll drop the ISDS claim if our government will repeal its policies. A trading system that allows corporations to extort governments and actually even facilitates that extortion is just plain wrong. That's why this report is so critical. It gives us the step-by-step playbook on how to untangle the United States from this corporate spider web. You know, I fought against ISDS during the Trans-Pacific Partnership fight. And I'm going to keep on fighting until every last one of our trade agreements is ISDS free. So I am glad to have all of you as partners in this fight. Thanks.
And there you have it. Yay, Senator Warren. If you want to watch the full presentation and webinar, you can visit our website. Again, that's www.rethinktrade.org or visit our YouTube. Thank you again to Senator Warren, Professor Stiglitz, and all of our amazing panelists and co-authors. And thank you to all of you for tuning in to each episode. Don't forget to like and to subscribe, and also tell others about our podcast. We couldn't do it without your support. Until next time, this is Lori Wallach with Rethinking Trade with Lori Wallach.